Hello, I'm Chris Jackson. This is number 0699, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0699. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Vic Klinko, who has an unusual collection. He has over 11,000 different bottle brands of hot sauce. He's also a self-described hot sauce educator.
You know, that's a lot of what I do, and especially through my social media, this collection has kind of taken on a life of its own. I get, obviously, lots of questions about hot sauces and different things, and it's my way, I guess, of helping educate folks out there that there are that many hot sauces globally. It's just insane, and my collection just touches the iceberg of what's actually out there. Oh, there's a lot more, yeah. My credit card's going to feel it, but yeah, there's a lot more.
Matthew Hughes is the author of the chilling novel, Ghost Dreams.
The character, his name is Stan Winkleman. He's a commercial burglar. He has this daughter who's a high-functioning autistic who's obsessed with ghosts. And she hears about a house that was sealed up way back in the 50s after it became haunted. And he realizes that if that place is still there, haunted by this ghost or not, it's full of stuff that is now very valuable antiques. And he knows a guy who will back a truck up to the door and take it all.
Science writer Andrew Vazekas, the night sky guy, is back talking about many issues, including the astronauts who are currently stranded on the International Space Station.
The Soyuz spacecraft that's docked to the International Space Station, it seems to have suffered what they're calling a coolant leak back in mid-December. And now they are trying to figure out how they can safely bring back the crew that was supposed to come back on this spacecraft. And now they're looking to see what they're going to do as an alternative. One of the things they are looking at is using SpaceX's Dragon capsule.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0699, was Chris Jackson, who is one of the co-hosts, along with Robbie Rist and Tom Bowers, of the excellent weekly podcast, The Spoon. Chris, like his two cohorts, is also a musician, but he also is the head cider maker at Treasury Cider in upstate New York. And you'll find the links to both of his lives on our website. Thank you very much, Chris, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff. Well, it all started when a woman purchased a drink from a Starbucks in Oklahoma City, but asked for a refund after she was unhappy with what they made for her. She showed up a few days later and was denied once more, so she got her husband, Richard Engel, who allegedly demanded his wife be reimbursed for the shoddy drink. The couple were each turned away by the barista because neither had a receipt or proof of purchase. So instead, Engel allegedly took off with the store's tip jar containing a whopping $1.32. The barista followed him out of the store and tried to block him from leaving while taking a photo of his license plate. Engel then bumped the barista a couple of times with his car before speeding away. Police found the suspect shortly after the incident at his home in Hurrah, Oklahoma. He was placed under arrest and faces charges of robbery and assault. I guess not everybody is happy living in Hurrah.
We're Starbucks. Nice to meet you.
Palm Beach, Florida police responded in force after a report of a guest pulling a gun on a hotel employee who couldn't fix his television set in his room at the Fairfield Inn and Suites by Marriott. In addition to patrol officers, the department's drone unit, tactical response team, and hostage negotiation team responded since there was a hotel full of guests. Authorities said, "We erred on the side of caution." That said, when confronted with the show of force, 70-year-old Joel Boudry surrendered without incident and was charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, improper exhibition of a firearm, and battery. Well, Joel will be pleased to know that I believe that Florida jails all have working TVs. In Dorchester, Massachusetts, firefighters responded to a house fire on December 27th at a three-story home around 11:30 a.m. Police officers at the scene talked to a witness who said a woman, 45-year-old Nikia Rivera, had told them, "I'm sorry, I had to do it," before she left on foot. Later, Rivera told officers, "That house is haunted. I lit the house on fire. The devil made me do it. There are ghosts in my house." While no residents or firefighters were hurt in the fire, Rivera was charged with arson and ordered to undergo psychiatric evaluation. In other words, a checkup from the neck up. By the way, what if she's right? And you know, there are really two forces at work here. She says her house is haunted, but she also said the devil made her do it. Which side is she on here? Meanwhile, a nighttime fire that broke out at a Wisconsin dairy plant sent a river of melted butter flowing across the factory floor and into nearby storm drains where it clogged a historic water artery.
Butter.
The conflagration erupted at an Associated Milk Producers facility in Portage at around 9 p.m. Nobody was injured. Authorities said it was unclear what caused the blaze, which is under investigation, and will assess the runoff before deciding how to best clean it up.
Butter.
Firefighters tried to enter the burning building but were deterred due to the heavy smoke and runoff. The fire broke out in a butter storage room, and the butter started to flow throughout the facility. Here's firefighter Troy Hasse.
When we first got it, tried to go upstairs to that part that collapsed, this stuff, the butter was running down like 3 inches thick on the steps. So our guys were like up to their knees trying to go up the steps to get to the top. And they're trying to drag the hose line. The hose line got so full of butter they couldn't hang on to it anymore.
While fires at food processing plants are not uncommon, some social media users, heck, why am I being so nice? Some social media idiots in spring of 2022 supported a false conspiracy theory that they were planned intentionally in order to cause food shortages. Tom Super of the National Chicken Council told Reuters, and wouldn't you like to see their board meetings, by the way? I can just picture it as a bizarro cartoon or a Far Side cartoon. Anyway, Tom Super of the National Chicken Council told Reuters the speculations were fake news. Said Super, "I can only speak for chicken, but like any other manufacturing plant or industry, there are generally a few fires that occur each year across the country. The majority of them are accidental and are contained rather quickly, and certainly not enough to affect the chicken supply." Wow, there's a conspiracy theorist for just about everything. And back to the fire. A fire where firefighters were up to their knees in butter.
Butter.
Well, thanks to the protective gear, none of them were sautéed. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program. And speaking of hot, Vic Klinko has a unique collection that he started 26 years ago. What started out as 3 bottles of hot sauce has ballooned to almost 11,000 different bottles of the hot stuff in his basement shrine. He's become such a celebrity in the hot sauce culture that manufacturers send him samples of their new varieties. Vic joins us via Zoom from North Carolina. Hi, Vic.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks for being on the program with us. How did this all start for you?
Right? I get that question a lot. You know, I think I grew up enjoying spicy food. Hot sauce seems to be, I guess, the easiest vehicle for that. Once I started trying some different sauces and from different areas around the world, man, I just got hooked, and it kind of, you know, it's borderline obsession now.
A borderline obsession. We're talking 11,000 different bottles. I didn't even know there were 11,000 different hot sauces.
Right. I mean, and that's, you know, that's a lot of what I do. And especially through my social media, you know, as people kind of, you know, this collection has kind of taken on a life of its own. I get obviously lots of questions about hot sauces and different things. And it's my way, I guess, of helping educate folks out there that there are that many hot sauces globally. It's just insane. And my collection just touches the iceberg of what's actually out there.
So there's a lot more than 11,000 is what you're saying.
Oh, there's a lot more. Yeah, yeah. My credit card's going to feel it, but yeah, there's a lot more.
Wow. So I would assume in most cases when it comes, first of all, I'm assuming that all these bottles that you have in your basement shrine, 11,000 bottles, are unopened. So I would assume then that when you purchase hot sauce, you get two of everything because I'm sure you want to taste it.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, not every single time, but the greater amount. Yes, I purchased two because that's what it's all about. Right. So this collection stemmed from my love of hot sauce. So to me, I guess it wouldn't make much sense just to put bottles on the shelf and not be able to enjoy them as well.
Now, there's hot sauce and then there's hot sauce. So where are you on the scale of what you like to use on a regular basis?
Yeah, I think I am at the top end, you know, the higher percentile, if you will. You know, everybody is different, right? All of our taste buds are different. All of our pain receptors in our mouths are different. I think I was just kind of blessed with a little bit of a higher tolerance. And also, because I've been doing it for so long, that it's just like when you're drinking alcohol, right? You can build up your tolerance for heat. I think that because I've just keep trying and I want to try every hot sauce. I want to try every single chili pepper that's out there. So I've built up a pretty good tolerance.
I saw a video of you and your basement, which is huge. It looks like a supermarket practically. And I noticed that you have them categorized and divided by countries. As a matter of fact, I actually saw in the picture that the video I watched, I actually saw the Barbados flag there, which is where my family's from. So you've got it divided by countries. Is there any country you're missing?
I think there's a lot of countries I'm missing. But, you know, so for me in that aspect, I have one side of the room is what I basically call domestic, right? It's from here, from the States. But again, as I get a lot of questions, I realize that there's so much out there globally. So for me to kind of take the collection maybe up one more notch and really kind of give it that museum feel, I thought putting the flags of each country, so the country of origin and where this sauce was made, I just thought was kind of a neat thing and really an eye-opener for folks like yourselves that kind of, you know, take a look at. But, you know, so on from that aspect, there are so many different areas and so many different regions that I'm 55 years old. I've been collecting for 26 years. I see no end in my collecting, and I really want to focus in on that international, again, that global chili community, and to be able to kind of showcase what is actually out there.
Is your family all into this as well, or do they just, you know, sit back and say, well, that's Vic?
Yeah, right. A little bit of both, right? So a lot of folks, and when they actually come and see it, you know, pictures are great, videos are wonderful, but when you actually stand in it, it's just something different, right? So a lot of people kind of get pulled in, and we, myself and the wife, we both receive text messages and, you know, pictures. Hey, do you have this one? Do you have that one? It's great when folks go on vacation, and again, they just send pictures of sauces. And my family, my close-knit family, because I've been doing this for so long, they've kind of given up every once in a while, unless they see something really neat. And then again, they just kind of, you know, most of them think that I already have it, but they'll at least give me a shot and send a picture, and I'm able to answer it.
Now, again, looking at your basement, I'm assuming that you had to get a house with a basement that large that you can display all of your work, all of your hobby. Did you actually purchase the house with your collection in mind?
Yes. Right. So that was a very interesting conversation with the realtor. For, you know, most people are looking for big kitchens or storage space or, you know, a master suite. I needed a space. I needed a huge space for my collection. And, you know, it was kind of funny because we had met in person. So I basically said, just Google me and you can kind of get an idea. And she was on the phone and she was like, oh, my, I kind of see what you're getting at. So, yes, the houses that we looked at, I had to make sure that it had enough space because this is honestly, and we've been here about a year and a half now. The last two houses that I had in Phoenix, which encompasses pretty close to 20 years of my life, I've never had every single bottle out on display at one time because I just didn't have the room. This is the first time that I've actually purchased a house that had enough space for me to do exactly what I wanted to make, I guess, my vision come true. And have, again, enough space to kind of grow into it as well.
What are we talking about square footage for the room that you have all your sauces in?
Oh, man, I don't even know what the square footage is. That's a good question. I don't know. It's the full footprint of the home, I can tell you that. I mean, it's monstrous.
Wow. So I mentioned in the introduction that you actually hear from manufacturers who send you samples. When did that begin and how much samples or how many companies are involved in doing this?
I couldn't put a number to it, but man, it's a lot. There are a lot of folks. So, and it's especially when fun things like this, and I have an opportunity to kind of talk about it and more people learn about what I do. It seems to be like ebbs and flows, right? And then I'll get a lot of folks that kind of reach out and I have them reaching out from all over the world. I mean, like I had a gentleman, it's probably been a good 6, maybe 8 years ago now, and it was the first hot sauce to go into production in Romania, and he sent me two bottles. It actually came in a box. It's a velvet covered box with black satin lining on the inside. The bottle is just absolutely gorgeous. He sent me two. I couldn't open the other one. It was just too beautiful for him. You know, as a collector, I couldn't bring myself to do it. But yeah, it happens. It happens a lot. Not to me, again, is humbling. And that is really why this whole museum shrine really kind of took off, I guess, because there are so many people that just want to be a part of it and want to have their bottles enshrined and shown. And I get a lot of attention for it. So it's an opportunity for me to give back to the industry, to help grow the industry. And the more the industry grows, the more bottles I get to collect. So it's a win-win.
Are companies looking for the Vic Klinko seal of approval?
Yeah, absolutely. I get lots of just questions from, hey, this is the label I'm thinking about doing. Hey, this is the flavor profile to actually sending sauces. And this is what we think we like, but this is with ginger. What's your opinion? And I am honored to be able to do that, you know, to kind of give my two cents. And, you know, because if you think about it, again, collecting for 26 years, I've been eating sauce for much longer than that. I've literally tried thousands and thousands of sauces in my day. And so I also went to culinary school. So I have a real good flavor taste of what it is. And I think that I can give back my opinion, and it's valued.
Do you think that hot sauce is almost like wine? It goes with certain meals. It goes with certain types of foods. It goes with certain types of moods.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, that's just that is a big, big question. And the answer simply is yes, because there are so many different styles of sauces out there that and some of them obviously complement the cuisines, I guess, that you put them with, like obviously, right, Mexican style sauces obviously go right. So Asian style goes perfectly with Asians. But there's a lot of cool crossovers, like sriracha, right? It's one of the most popular sauces out there. And that's actually, sriracha is actually a style of hot sauce. Everybody thinks of the red bottle with a little green cap, right? Or it's a clear bottle with a red sauce and a green cap. That's by Hoi Fung, and that is their version of sriracha. But it's, you know, kind of taken on a life of its own, right? It's like Kleenex and Coke, right? And, you know, it's become that big. And I think that it's pretty neat that you can put sriracha, which is an Asian style sauce, and you can put it on pizza, and it's phenomenal.
Do you put hot sauce on everything?
literally everything. There's not anything that I will not put hot sauce and or I carry a lot of pepper flakes or powders. They seem to travel well and they're easy. I could just throw one in my pocket as I go. But yes, I do. Again, it's a lifestyle. My license plate says hot sauce. I mean, I have a tattoo of a chili pepper on my arm. I mean, it's who I am. It's embedded in my soul, if you will.
Do you have a favorite hot sauce, or is that like saying, what's your favorite child?
Yeah, that's my joke, man. That's what I always go to. I it's really too tough. There's so much good stuff out there. There are a few go-tos that I will kind of go back and forth on, or go back, you know, depending on what I'm eating. But again, because I'm purchasing so many people are sending me incredible sauces. I typically don't go back and repeat a whole lot because I just have so much to kind of get through and I have to put it on everything.
You know, most people in life, for whatever reason, be it major or minor, have a visit to the hospital. You know, it could be something as simple as taking out your tonsils or things like that. Have you ever stayed in a hospital? And if so, can you eat hospital food? Because that's pretty bland on its own, never mind any sauces involved.
Yeah, right. I've never, knock on wood, I have not spent any major long time in a hospital. But any time that I've, you know, done in-and-out procedures or sent something, the wife keeps hot sauce in her purse for me as well. So I'm locked and loaded at all times. So I have something on me at pretty much everywhere.
In case of emergency, break purse.
Exactly, yes.
Vic, thank you very much for talking to us. It's fascinating that you have a hobby like this that you've had for so long, and it's grown to the point where you're the go-to guy when it comes to hot sauce.
Isn't that phenomenal, right? It's just humbling when you put it that way. It just makes it tingles in my, you know, through my body. It's an honor for somebody like myself who, again, just loved spicy food, and now to be embodied in the industry and the community. It's, again, it's humbling. That's the only word that I can use for it.
Thank you very much for being on the program, Vic.
I appreciate you, man. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Vic Klinko, the man who has the largest collection of hot sauce bottles. I don't know about you, but I could have gone on talking to Vic. As a matter of fact, I did. So if that's not enough of listening to Vic for you, Patreon Stuff File subscribers, you'll have more as a Patreon reward extra. Just go to our Patreon page and become one of the select patrons of the show. You can visit Patreon at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. You're listening to The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
There's still more guests, more news, and an idiot of the day coming your way on The Stuff File Program. Stay tuned. The Stuff File Program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like, but the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. This is The Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder. This broadcast is coming to you from upstairs. Get out of the house.
Still to come in the program, we'll talk to the author of Ghost Dreams. Plus, Andrew Vazekas, the night sky guy, is here to talk about some of the interesting space stories that we can look forward to in 2023, and also stranded in space. But let's get right back to the stuff. Oh, yes, we do have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on. But as I said just a few moments ago, let's get back to the stuff. Phoenix police officer Christian Goggins, who had been assigned to home duty, took advantage of the situation by dedicating more hours to his porn career. Goggins is facing an internal investigation after he allegedly traveled back and forth to Las Vegas while on the clock to produce and star in pornographic videos. He posted the films to a public Twitter page using his stage name, Rico Blaze, which has since been made private. A Phoenix PD public information officer said Goggins' work-from-home assignment required only that he call in once a day. Isn't assigned to home duty just a fancy way of saying suspended with pay? Well, if he eventually gets fired as a cop, I'm sure he'll rise to the occasion as a porn star. 48-year-old Anthony Thomas Tarduno saved the Hernando County, Florida Sheriff's Office the trouble of investigating after one of their patrol cars was set on fire on December 7th in Spring Hill, Florida. As officers looked over the scene, Tarduno walked up and confessed to being the arsonist, saying that he had been drinking at a bar and decided he'd like to set the squad car on fire. Tarduno placed a bag of garbage under the patrol car and, using a lighter, set it ablaze. He admitted to detectives that when he gets drunk, he does stupid things. Oh, I'm guessing that his stupidity isn't limited to just when he's on alcohol. Also, it's a lonely life when there's nobody around to plan your intervention. And police responded to a burglary report at Legacy Contracting Solutions in West Palm Beach, Florida. Officers were able to quickly locate several of the stolen items in a shed and recycling bin about a mile away and arrested 62-year-old Troy Bellamy for burglary, grand theft, and criminal mischief. Among the items Bellamy was accused of stealing, a drill, grinder, wrench set, other construction items, and an iPad that had its tracking feature turned on, said Bellamy to arresting officers, "I knew that thing would track me." Well, clearly here lies a perfect example of the difference between knowledge and wisdom. A woman waiting at the gate for her pre-Christmas flight to board at Florida's Miami International Airport suddenly realized her children had walked away without her noticing, so naturally she went to scream at the ticket agent at the desk demanding she find them. The woman allegedly smashed the boarding pass reader and then picked up the agent's computer monitor and threw it at her, causing injury and, American Airlines says, about $10,000 in damage to their equipment. Miami-Dade police arrested 25-year-old Camelia McMillie of Alabama, who was charged with aggravated battery, criminal mischief, and disorderly conduct. The children simply had gone to the washroom. I'm beginning to wonder if those kids didn't wander away, but rather they were trying to escape. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, I'm wanting to ask once again, how was your holiday season? I bring that up because I bet it was better than Keisha Lynette Christmas's Christmas. The unfortunately named Ms. Christmas has been arrested in Houston, Texas for allegedly abducting her manager at a Smoothie King. Allegedly, Christmas went to the store on December 13th to pick up her paycheck with her 15-year-old daughter. Another employee told Christmas she was fired while the manager was temporarily away, and Christmas apparently did not like the news. Christmas began yelling and went behind the register to steal money. Once the manager arrived and gave Christmas her check, the scene continued. Christmas allegedly grabbed the manager's neck and began slamming her head into the wall, all the while yelling, "You're not going to ruin my Christmas." She also slapped and choked the manager. Witnesses claim the 15-year-old daughter was screaming at her mother to let the victim go. Christmas then reportedly forced the manager across the street to Wells Fargo to withdraw more money from the ATM, with her daughter following behind. She allegedly withheld the victim's phone as bait and threatened the manager, saying, "If you try to run, I'll push you out into oncoming traffic." By the way, part of the attack was captured on video. She is charged with aggravated kidnapping, robbery with bodily injury, and retaliation. Do you somehow get the sense as to why she was fired? I mean, this is a little Christmas that nobody needs at this very moment. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Matthew Hughes is an award-winning Canadian science fiction and fantasy author, but his latest work takes him in a different direction. It's a ghost story called Ghost Dreams. Matthew joins us via Zoom from British Columbia. Hi, Matthew.
Hello.
Thanks for being on the program with us. So, first of all, tell us about this new direction you've taken. I mean, you, as I said, you are award-winning, so you decided to go a slightly different direction. How did this come to be?
It was an impulse. I never outline or plan my stories. I start with a character and a vague idea of what's going to happen, and then I push on from there. I was actually had in mind when I started this one that I would write a kind of Thorne Smith, if you remember him, a kind of farce about a burglar and a ghost. But once I get going, what happens is the characters begin to evolve out of me and develop, and they sort of, the story comes out of them. And the characters that came out of me were not really all that funny. It wasn't a farce. And it turned into a kind of offbeat. It's a ghost story, it's a crime story, and it's a love story all at once.
Even though it's a ghost story, is this something that comes entirely out of your imagination? Or do you, in some way, shape, or form, get to do some research into the theory or the idea of ghosts to write a novel like this?
I'm really just going on the basis of what I've known, you know, all my life. Ghosts haunt places when they have died and things weren't settled. There's something they need before they can move on. I mean, that's an old idea. And that's what was coming out of my head.
Yeah, it is an old idea, but I've never understood why you don't see more ghosts in hospitals.
Exactly, yes. And why are there no animal ghosts? We ought to be surrounded by dead birds and insects, you know?
Very good point. Very good point. So what's the story about? Tell us a little bit about the story.
Okay. The character, his name is Stan Winkleman. He's a man just edging out of middle age. He's a commercial burglar, which means he doesn't go into people's houses. He steals from warehouses and trucks and jewelry stores and so on, and usually on contract. But he has this daughter who's a high-functioning autistic who's obsessed with ghosts, and she hears about a house that was sealed up way back in the 50s after it became haunted. And he realizes that if that place is still there, haunted by this ghost or not, it's full of stuff that is now very valuable antiques. And he knows a guy who will back a truck up to the door and take it all. So he goes to scout the place out. And yes, it really is a big old house. It was brand new when it was sealed up. It's built on the grounds of an old insane asylum from, you know, the early part of the 20th century, which was torn down. But the guy liked the idea, had that big wall around it because it was in the 50s and he was building a house that would shelter him and his family once, you know, the bombs came and the Russians invaded and so on. So he goes into the house and he finds it's all full of interesting stuff, but he also finds it's a ghost. And the ghost is a woman who married into, she was a maid in a wealthy family in Connecticut, that area. And she married the son of the house, of the family, but the rest of them didn't want her. They went off on a honeymoon. She got pregnant. They came back. He got pneumonia and died. And suddenly the family said, right, we're getting rid of her. And they bribed a judge to write one of those orders they used to do in those days. And they put her in an insane asylum for life. And then they took her baby when it was born and gave it to an orphanage. And she wants to know, now that she's dead, she wants to know what happened to her baby. And that's the story.
It's a fascinating concept for a story. I'm just wondering, do you plot this all out before you start writing, or do you figure out the story and learn the story as you write?
Well, as I say, the story comes out of the characters. And so things occur to me as I'm writing it. And that's, you know, the characters are developing. And what they want is what makes the story. I've never plotted a story out. I tried in my early days because I read books that said you're supposed to do that. And I couldn't. I stall. I really have to be the characters as I'm writing them. And then it all becomes clear to me at 1,000 words a day.
Speaking of characters, you yourself, a very interesting character. Since 2007, you have traveled the world as a house sitter, living in 12 countries?
Yes.
How does one even begin to do that?
Well, I tried to hedge my bets to start with. I went to the UK. I still have a British passport because I was born there. And I started working for two house-sitting services. But most of those gigs were for people, you know, retired people who've already got a home somewhere and want to go away for a week or two. I needed a place to live. So I started connecting with house-sitting services via the internet, two or three of them that I've used over the years. And if I can, I get 3-month, 6-month, even a 1-year gig. And then I have a place to live. And I can live on what I make writing fiction, which these days is not that much. You either make Stephen King money or just don't make enough.
I'm just curious, since you've lived so many spaces, so many places, and so many houses, houses that are not your own, how does the environment that you're in at any given time affect the way you write?
You know, I don't think it does. It's the same laptop and the same keyboard. Yeah, I just move it to different places. I don't spend a lot of time looking out the window when I'm working, so I'm just looking at the machine and writing. It is nice to, you know, get up in the morning and walk out into the courtyard of an Italian villa and, you know, have your cup of tea sitting there looking at the scenery. But it doesn't affect the writing.
So you can write just about anywhere.
I have always written for a living. I was first a journalist, and then I kind of slid into speech writing for politicians. And then I freelanced speech writing for 30 years, as mostly doing corporate, because that's where the money was. I started out in the newsroom of a Vancouver daily newspaper with a manual typewriter and, you know, 30 guys around me banging away on manual typewriters and talking on the phone. And I had a clock on the wall and a deadline, and I had to get it done by then. So it was a very good apprenticeship for learning, you know, bum in the seat, fingers on the keyboard, get it done.
I won't make any jokes about being in journalism or writing for politicians, but I will ask the question, how difficult or different is it to go from being a journalist or writing speeches and doing fiction as opposed to fact?
Well, not that hard. A lot, you know, speech writing is not much about fact. Most really good speeches don't contain more than one or two new facts. We mostly deal with old facts because speakers generally are trying to establish a rapport with the audience, and they tend to speak to audiences that have the same worldview that they do. And it's all a matter of reinforcing the I'm okay, you're okay, we're okay together. You don't see the Chamber of Commerce inviting the local person from Greenpeace to come and speak. You know, the Chamber of Commerce brings in somebody from business or maybe government to do with business. And it's all a let's be comfy together kind of thing.
Well, speaking of a rapport with the audience, how do you, or do you even think about the rapport you have with your audience? And again, this is a different direction for you. So people who are familiar with your work, do you consider that when you're sitting down writing, thinking about the audience, or are you just writing for you the way you want and you don't think of the outcome as far as your readers are concerned?
Well, I don't much, no. I have a certain group of people who will buy whatever I write, and they like it. They like the tone. They like the humor that I put in. They like the characters. And very much they like the settings. Like I do dying earth fantasy set in the far distant future when magic is, you know, come back. And I do space opera, and there are people who like that. But no, I don't think much about the reader. I'm a slave to the characters. So they're my focus.
Well, again, it sounds like a delightfully interesting concept in the latest book called Ghost Dreams. Matthew, I thank you very much for taking the time to being on the program with us.
I've been happy to be here.
Matthew Hughes, author of the novel Ghost Dreams. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com to the page for this show, which is show number 0699, and you'll find links to Matthew's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
Got something for the mailbag? Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Hey, how would you like to become a patron of the Stuff File program? It's easy to do. By going to patreon.com and becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book, Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at patreon.com. If you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. Join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. Sign up at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the Stuff File presents Andrew Fazekas, the night sky guy. It's radio that's out of this world.
Andrew Fazekas, the night sky guy, is a member of the Royal Astronomical Society of Canada and the author of National Geographic's Backyard Guide to the Night Sky and also National Geographic's Stargazer's Atlas, the Ultimate Guide to the Night Sky. And Andrew, we'll talk about what 2023 holds for space and space exploration. But before we get to that, let's delve into the Soyuz leak and perhaps SpaceX planning to go and rescue the astronauts.
Yeah, I mean, this is all, you know, happening in real time, and NASA's really trying to figure out the best case solution and to this problem where the Soyuz spacecraft that's docked to the International Space Station and is used by crew members to taxi to and from the Earth's surface, it seems to have suffered a kind of a what they're calling a coolant leak back in mid-December. And now they are trying to figure out how they can safely bring back the crew that was supposed to come back. It's two Russians and an American who were slated to come back on this spacecraft. And now they're looking to see what they're going to do as an alternative. And one of the things they are looking at is using SpaceX's Dragon capsule, which is really the only American option right now, American spacecraft. Other than that, it's the Russian Soyuz that is used, you know, has been since the start of the space station program to ferry cargo and astronauts. But now we've had in the last few years a very successful run by SpaceX's Crew Dragon capsule, and this one's called Endurance, and it's been there since early October, docked there, and was slated to return back in the month of March with astronauts, Japanese and American astronauts. But now NASA's thinking, should we use this SpaceX vehicle to return the astronauts? Now, that's not without an issue, though, because normally SpaceX has the crew that goes on board this spacecraft have special custom-made spacesuits that they would use. And obviously this crew has Russian spacesuits, which are completely different, actually quite archaic compared to what the SpaceX more modern version is. And we don't know if this is compatible. Are they going to create new suits and send them up separately? Can they safely be inside the spacecraft and have all the environmental controls available to them with the with the Russian spacesuits inside the SpaceX capsule? We don't know yet. So they're still kind of trying to figure all of that out.
I'm sorry, but were you alluding to the fact that the SpaceX rocket is actually already there?
There is one there, but the question is do they need to send a new one? Can they use the one that's there? We don't know.
And what does this say about the Soyuz leak? Is it something that they feel they can repair? And if so, how do they repair it? Because they're in space.
Exactly. So the question is, can they do a spacewalk on the outside of the space? Is it something that they need to do on the outside? Is it something that they can get access to from within the spacecraft? Do they just dump the spacecraft and let it re-enter and burn up in the atmosphere, you know, if it's unfixable? I mean, there's a lot of issues here that need to be addressed, and this is all going to be probably playing out within the next few weeks.
Okay, so as I mentioned, we're now in 2023. Belated Happy New Year, sir.
Same to you.
What does it mean for space and space exploration going forward?
Well, I mean, if we're talking about specifically human space exploration, and that's what really, you know, SpaceX and the International Space Station is about, I think the big one of the big issues is international cooperation, right? Let's face it, there's this war going on in Ukraine that Russia is waging. There's a lot of fear that Russia is going to escalate the war in the coming months. And the International Space Station has been shielded for the most part from most of the problems related to this. But, you know, the question is this going to, how long can that last? How long can they protect this international program that has the Western nations cooperating with Russia on the ISS? And fears are that this will break down. There's already been a lot of, I mean, you and I have talked throughout 2022 of all the, you know, bombastic remarks that the former Russian head of the Russian space agency was calling out. And, you know, they've expressed, you know, publicly, Russia has, that they want to leave the space station program. Question is, will it get accelerated or will they be booted out? I mean, already, you know, Peter, if we look a little bit more at the international scene and the players, the European Space Agency has had already some of its satellites launching of their satellites moved over to using SpaceX rockets instead of the Russian Soyuz rocket system. And that's because they're boycotting Russia. Very simply, so they've just scratched that completely. In fact, one of their major satellites that's been implicated is an astronomical observatory called Euclid, and it's something that astronomers scientists have been waiting for this telescope to be launched, and so that the launching has been pushed off because of the, you know, politicians basically saying, no way, we're not using Russian rockets anymore. Also, there's been hints of just an idea for you of how this war in Ukraine is implicated, you know, is being used by politicians for changing up what's happening with space cooperation. The European Space Agency has had plans in place or working on it with the Chinese government on having European astronauts go on board China's orbiting space station. And this would have been a fantastic collaborative venture, but looks like they may actually abandon that. The European Space Agency is abandoning the efforts of sending their astronauts on it. And that's simply because China is really warming its relations with Russia in terms of their space programs and cooperative ventures between the two nations. And that's being frowned upon, obviously, by Western nations. So that kind of cooperative ventures, you know, that would have expanded beyond Russia, including China, because China is very aggressive with their space program. It's a shame, you know, it really is. But that's how politics are being injected into space cooperative ventures.
Well, I don't want to get I don't want to delve into conspiracy theories, but let's go back to the Soyuz situation for a second because of what you just simply said. Is it a situation where Russia is in a situation to borrow from Peter to pay Paul, as the saying goes? Because the war is costing them a lot. Space exploration costs them a lot. Are they running out of funds to do certain things, and are they kind of secretly wishing that maybe they had nothing to do with the space station anymore because it's a major financial drain?
Very well could be. I mean, that wish we were a fly on the wall in some of these rooms in the Russian Space Agency. It could very well be. It is well known that they have fallen behind in providing a lot of the upgrades that they had promised to the International Space Station over the last few years. They're really not meeting their requirements in many respects of the replacement of components to the space station. I mean, the maintenance of the ISS is pretty complex, and each partner, you know, they rely on these partners to provide those upgrades, replacements, and Russia is falling behind on a lot of promised components. And so, yeah, I mean, I could see that very well play out, Peter, that they're secretly going, well, maybe we'll just let things go. And so if we're booted out, who cares, you know?
And on the other side, I'm sure there's, because of political situations, many European countries and, of course, the United States who are kind of hoping to see them go.
Yeah, I mean, it might make them stronger, you know, let's just say. And it would bolster a lot of the other kind of pacts that each nation has with each other in terms of space exploration. It would could very well benefit, for instance, the Canadian Space Agency, the European Space Agency, the Japanese Space Agency, all of these members, nations, maybe their shares would increase. But of course, it's a major financial burden too to maintain, and let's just face it, the ISS is seeing its age. They're thinking of retiring it within this decade, handing it over perhaps to private industry. So it'll be interesting, and that's the other big factor, Peter, is the private component and how they're playing. And already you can see NASA is increasingly relying on like SpaceX, others like Blue Origin, Boeing, Lockheed Martin, the other traditional companies, like private companies like that they've dealt with over the years, of taking that burden of taxiing service to and from the space station and such, building major reusable rocket components. SpaceX is doing that. So looking forward in time, I could see the private sector really stepping up even more and gaining a lot in terms of contracts.
Well, very quickly, why would private industry want to pick up the tab for what is basically an aged, out-of-date space station, as opposed to building a consortium to build their own newer, more modern space station?
Yeah, I don't think it's a question of this or that. I mean, there are plans afoot for other space stations to be built, but the fact is that the assets that are already in space, the money that has taken, you know, the effort to place them there, and it's a matter of maintaining, and there are components, I'm quite sure, that are reusable, you know, can be with some maintenance and upgrades. There are, you know, ideas of, you know, upgrading the international space, certain components being refurbished or added to new habitat modules, and create, say, private labs, science labs, or hotel. The idea of having a hotel chain attached to it. There's a lot of discussion related to that as well. So, but that would be just one asset, and it's there already. So there are cost benefits to using already existing components that are in orbit.
Well, we have just scratched the surface, and we've already run out of time. You know what that means? We go to Patreon. Are you ready to do this?
Yeah, let's do it.
Andrew Fizakis, the night sky guy, and the author of National Geographic's Backyard Guide to the Night Sky, and also the new National Geographic Stargazer's Atlas, the ultimate guide to the night sky. You can check out his website at thenightskyguy.com, and you can go to my website at thestufffile.com to the page for this show, which is show number 0699, and you can find links to Andrew's site to get your own personal autographed copy. And Patreon subscribers, you can hear more of Andrew as a Patreon reward extra, where we'll discuss more about what 2023 holds in space, and also what's the man-made object that's the furthest away from Earth. Just go to our Patreon page, and if you're not already a member, become one of the select patrons of the show. Visit patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. You're listening to The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Well, boys and girls, it's that moment you've all been waiting for. It's time now for The Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for The Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents The Idiot of the Day.
A Florida couple found themselves in hot water after one of them called 911 to ask for help removing some items from a house they were actually burglarizing. According to the Polk County Sheriff's Office, police received a 911 call from a home in Poinciana, but no one was on the other end of the line. Authorities responded to the residence and found a man and his girlfriend who did not live at the house. Upon further investigation, it was discovered that the couple had entered the house through an unlocked door and were in the process of stealing items. In a bizarre twist, the girlfriend reportedly asked deputies if they could help them carry their belongings out of the house. The couple also asked for a ride to the airport to catch a flight to New York. Unfortunately for the duo, their travel plans were put on hold as they were arrested and jailed on burglary charges. It was later revealed that the man was a suspect in a recent robbery at a Dollar General store. Now, why, oh why, if you're robbing a house, would you call 911 and then ask for help from the arriving cops to haul away the loot? And by the way, also, do you think that cops would Uber you to the airport? Really? Why would you do that? Well, one reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0699. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0699. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including kdxradio.com, truetalkradio.com, over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, WLSLLPFM in Dade City, Florida, KZZHLPFM in Eureka, California, CKUWFM in Winnipeg, CFMU in Hamilton, CKLU in Sudbury, Local 107.3 FM in St. John, CHSR in Fredericton, and also streaming on just about any streaming service your little heart desires. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Look, you weren't literally with him. Well, maybe you were, but I don't see how. I mean, he does record these in advance, you know, and okay, maybe you did listen with him. Who am I to call you a liar? Personally, I've never met the guy, and I'm not in a hurry to either.